is The End User, episode 120 for Tuesday, January 15th, Cubed Up Wrap-Up. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I am Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr.
So you're sticking with the Futurist Prime label. That's
until I come up with something better, which will be never.
So I don't know. That seems like a good label. I like it.
Maybe I'll come up with something official.
So we are wrapping up CES on the show tonight.
Right. It had just opened when we talked about it last week. And so now we're going to get everything else out of our systems.
Yeah, we kind of had some weird timing with our show because we didn't have a podcast in the heat of it. It was really only at the very beginning, and now after it's pretty much over.
Well, I like it that way. That's good.
That's true. Watching everything from afar, it's kind of good to let all the news roll in so then we can let it wash over us and judge all of the devices.
Right. I mean, I was basically only reading wrap-ups of wrap-ups. And so this is our wrap-up of wrap-ups of wrap-ups of CES.
All right. I like it. That'll be the name of the segment, perhaps.
All right. CES wrap-up, wrap-up.
Wrap-up. There's three of them, right?
Yes, but we can't say the third wrap-up.
Okay. So we'll call this segment the CES wrap-up, wrap-up.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Well, let's jump into it. So we're going to pass along a few stories from The Verge. They have their best of CES article out there, and we'll kind of take our
pick. And
their
coverage was extensive.
Oh, it was insane. They did such a good job. I can't believe how much content they crank out during CES. But so in the show notes, we're going to have the best of from The Verge, and we're going to pick our highlights in our wrap-up. So the first one that struck me that being particularly interesting is the new Fitbit Flex, which is a kind of Livestrong-style bracelet.
Well, obviously they're going after the Nike Fuel Band here,
right,
which is a $150 device that syncs up with some but not all of your previous Nike sports accessories. But then this one is only $100. Which is the same price as their Fitbit One, their latest top-of-the-line model. And they have another new device. I don't know if we mentioned it on the show before, the Fitbit Zip, which is only $60.
That's right. And this seems really interesting to me because the Fitbit software is so good. That's what's really awesome about Fitbit is that they've got the software side of it down. And I'm not so sure because I've never used a Nike Fuel Band if they're up to snuff with what Fitbit is offering. But it seems like they've really cracked this. And I think the wristband as it is a better way of doing it than the clip.
Well, it's one that's definitely proved very popular. Nike has sold a lot of them. And so if Fitbit can sell half as many as Nike did at 2/3 of the price, they'll probably make plenty of money on it.
Right. So that seems like a particularly good one. I just got a Fitbit for somebody for Christmas. So we're already out of date, I suppose.
Which one did you get?
The one.
The Fitbit One. Well,
right.
No. So it's still a top of the line. It's the same price as the Flex. I got somebody the Zip for Christmas, actually.
Ah, okay. Cool. That's funny. I didn't know that. So should we just move into the next one? The next one's
sure.
A little crazy. Yeah, it's the Oculus Rift, which is a very insane gadget. Let me see if I can explain what this thing is. It's a pair of goggles, and right now it's basically a developer's preview of some sort because it's like held together with duct tape or something. But this thing,
it's in between Kickstarter and actual product.
Right.
So their current prototype is hacked into a pair of ski goggles.
Yeah, and this thing looks pretty epic, and I'm really excited to see what they can do with this. Because, you know, it's a product that I'm not sure we know what we're going to do with it quite yet. But it's a pair of goggles, and it's stereoscopic 3D, and you look into these things, and you can run game engines and look at them in 3D with the goggles. So, again, it's really really early for this, but it seems very interesting.
Now, the main part of the 3D is that when you move your head around, the display moves with it, right? So you're really visually immersed in whatever whatever environment you're simulating.
Right. So yeah, when you tilt your head around, like you tilt it sideways towards your shoulder or something, it tracks with that so that you can actually survey the landscape that you're in. So I've never seen anything quite like that before, and so this is completely new.
I guess gamers and game developers are already starting to jump onto it. Solus Sweet in the chat room is telling us that there's already a Skyrim driver, so you can play Skyrim with these goggles, even though they're not on the market yet.
And then what's a little weird is that so you can't move around in the environment. You still need a controller for that. So I'm not sure how it's going to play out and how this kind of paradigm of control is going to play out. But man, this looks just fantastic. I can't wait to see what developers are going to do with it. That's the real crux here, is we have to see what people actually do with this thing.
Well, the other crux to me is what it's going to actually look like as a final product. It's pretty clunky right now.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, like I said, it's some notion of a developer's preview right now. So it's not it's definitely not finalized.
Right. Well, our next story is another Kickstarter success story, and that's the Pebble smartwatch. Now, I think we talked about this before. It's an e-paper watch that syncs over Bluetooth to any smartphone or, I guess, a computer, you know, whatever you can work in Bluetooth with. It's very slim. It's very sleek. The battery, as they've promised, it'll last more than a day, and it's real now.
Yeah, it actually exists now. You can even play tic-tac-toe on it. This watch to me is awesome. The design they've got going is fantastic. The idea of having a Bluetooth watch that connects to your phone is a good one, I think. And it's actually shipping now, so that's good.
Right.
So,
well, everyone said it was awesome right from the beginning of their Kickstarter.
Right.
The question was, could they turn it into a real product for the price they thought they could? And yeah. They've made a few changes. They made the screen a little bit smaller, but they've essentially done it.
Yeah, so if you're still using a spot watch, I suppose you can retire that and upgrade to the Pebble.
I'm pretty sure spot watches are in mandatory retirement already.
Yeah, definitely so. So yeah, it turned out well, I think. And I think they're going to do really well with this product.
Yeah, me too. I might get one next year.
Next year, when the price goes down a little?
When demand goes down. Or,
right,
I don't know,
demand.
When I have more money.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to this actually hitting the market. They're shipping to their Kickstarter backers, but they're not actually in the market yet. But the device exists.
Well, in that case, I know a few people who will probably get it soon.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
So our next story comes straight out of the future via Audi.
Yeah, so Audi was also at CES. You know, I always discount for some reason the automobile stuff at CES, and
well, they've got their own convention.
Yeah, that's right. They've got their own conventions where they get to show stuff off. But there's actually a really large contingent of car manufacturers that go to CES, and Audi was one of them, and they showed off a self-driving car.
Right. Now, this is not one of those Google self-driving cars that has, you know, a big computer and camera set up on the top of it, but everything is apparently integrated.
Yeah, it's all in Audi, and there's not much word on the technology that they're building on top of, which is what I'd be really curious about. You know, apparently they have this prototype, and you can beckon it, and it will come. Now, the one thing that stands in the way of these kinds of technologies is that our laws just aren't there for self-driving car. There's no infrastructure for us to deal with this kind of thing. So I don't think this is something you're going to see actually come to the market for a while until we can make it legal in places where it's not already legal. Remember, there were a couple states where they made self-driving car exceptions or something like that.
California, Nevada, maybe one more.
Yeah. So we have to get there before we can actually use these things. And
that's true. And they also have to come on the market. There's no price or release date for this Audi self-driving A7.
Yeah, this particular model, I bet you, is not something we're ever going to see. But it's a research prototype that they're going to have going forward. And it's exciting to see somebody other than Google get in this space, because I haven't really seen anything tangible from the other companies other than the self-parking cars, which
right.
everybody seems to have now. But the fully automated self-driving car is starting to come into view, isn't it?
We're starting to see it. I think we'll see more of it in CES 2014.
Yeah, isn't that the case? And probably 2015 and 16 as well. And we'll
oh, well, at that point, they'll just be old hat. Everybody will have self-driving cars.
Yeah.
So should we move on to our next wrap-up?
Yeah. So our next wrap-up is from one of your favorite blogs, I know, The Wirecutter.
Yeah, I really love this blog because they try to not post anything unless absolutely necessary.
That's kind of nice, so you don't get inundated.
So their idea for this CES, this was the Wirecutter's first CES as a blog team. They sent 8 people to CES walking around and also reading other people's reviews. And they distilled it down to 12 yeah. gadgets.
So 12 products
out of hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, out of the very, very, very many. So do you want to highlight a couple?
Sure. They have long been fans of Panasonic plasmas as the best TV for your money, and there is a new Panasonic plasma, which is $100 cheaper than last year's, and that's really all there is to say about that. They highlighted something which is really interesting to me. It's a 27-inch monitor for $390 from Monoprice. What they do is they buy 27-inch IPS panels from Korea. These are the same panels from the same factory that are used in Apple's 27-inch iMac and Thunderbolt display, but they use the factory seconds from that. Now, if you order one from Korea, you're likely to get a few dead pixels in there, but Monoprice apparently checks them before they ship to make sure that all the monitors are clean.
Monoprice is a fantastic resource.
Yeah, true. And now they're selling high-end monitors for under $400.
That's really cool. I really need to upgrade these monitors. These are TFT monitors. They're not very good. So maybe I should have a look at these things. Their monitors I'm staring at right now are 1440 by 900, so they're getting long in the tooth for sure.
Well, in that case, one 27-inch monitor would give you the same amount of pixels as your two monitors right now.
This is true. I'd like to order two of them just for the production of the podcast at very least. So it's compared to what these cost, it's still kind of expensive. But for what they are, man, that is fantastic.
All right, another monitor that they mention is Lenovo's ThinkVision LT1423P. What it basically is a wireless touchscreen monitor with a 10-hour battery life. The idea is it's sort of a tablet, but it's more of a wireless front end for a Windows 8 desktop computer.
So what is this? You plug in a little USB key, and then you get a remote display kind of deal? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah, or there's a $450 Wi-Fi version.
Right, interesting. So I could see this coming into handy with headless servers, you know, servers that don't have a monitor on them. You can just kind of walk around and plug this little thing in. That seems really neat.
And that's exactly what the Digital Media Zone's Richard Gunther said when he found it on the show floor.
Yeah, that's right. He was excited about it from the media center perspective, because that also opens up a whole host of capabilities that I don't really think I've seen before. So that's very exciting on a number of levels.
Right. Well, that concludes my wrap-up of the Wirecutter's wrap-up of the wrap-ups of CES gadgets. If you want to check out the rest of Wirecutter's top recommended products from CES, you should check out their wrap-up.
Yeah,
which we'll post in the show notes.
We'll have a link in the show notes, so head over to thedigitalmediazone.com and have a look. So we've got so much top news. I'm almost tired already.
Right. So now I think it's time for our wrap-up. So this is the non-meta wrap-up.
Right.
We'll go through it quickly, though.
Okay, so Sony is announcing some Android devices. They're 5-inch displays with 1080p screens. So that seems to be the trend now, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Way more pixel density than anyone could ever use.
Yeah,
but
it's pretty
if
wild.
If phones are four times, or if televisions are four times 1080p in the future, then I guess phones have to be 1080p.
You heard it right from the futurist Prime's mouth. So yeah, this is the cream of the crop of the currently available hardware, it seems, right?
And the Snapdragon S4, 2 gigabytes of RAM, NFC screen mirroring. I've never even heard of that before.
And a 13 megapixel camera. This just seems like the cream of the crop, and that's pretty exciting to see. Yeah, I don't think I've seen an Android phone with 2 gig of RAM before either.
I mean, yeah, I can't think of one, and there's no iPhone with 2 gigs of RAM.
That's faster than a low end computer.
True.
So that's kind of incredible. Yeah. So and the design looks competent too. Some of the Sony designs of the past have always been actually pretty nice looking, but for some reason I get the feeling that they haven't sold very well in the marketplace.
The hands-on reviews I've heard are they're very comfortable and very well designed. Sony's previous Xperia phones and Sony Ericsson's before that, they do sell pretty well internationally. They have not been marketing them in the U.S.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's the divide. Similar to the way Nokia operated in the past, the Xperia line is probably about the same, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So we don't see them as much here, but internationally they're very popular. I remember they made a Windows Mobile 6 phone that was kind of insane looking. They experiment a little sometimes.
Great. Well, moving on to TV technologies, we just wanted to let you know about an update to Dish's Hopper technology. They've redefined their algorithm that lets you automatically skip commercials. Another thing that they've added is a way to access your DVR listings on a web or an iPad or any other tablet.
Yeah, so they're shipping Slingbox functionality loaded right into the box, and it seems pretty disruptive. I think the technology that they're employing is, you know, famously they're in a lawsuit, and I think this is really good for consumers in the end, if it sticks around.
Yeah, if it doesn't get sued out of existence.
Yeah, so they keep poking the bear.
Right. Well, it's currently available, so if you want it before it disappears and you have Dish or are willing to get Dish, then I guess you should get it. Dish also, by the way, in a move that no one saw coming, they made a bid for the Clearwire WiMAX network that Sprint just bought a few weeks ago and we talked about on the show.
Oh, yeah, they want to snap up that spectrum, I guess, right?
Right, they want to snap up the WiMAX spectrum.
I doubt they'd actually use it for WiMAX, right?
They would probably use it for some sort of content distribution or maybe an internet service provider that goes along with their satellite TV.
Yeah, definitely so. So if I bought this device, I'd also have to buy a TV to go along with it. Do you have any you could recommend to me?
Yes, I have two. One you might not be able to get just yet, but it's definitely the cream of the crop. Samsung has unveiled a 110-inch ultra-high definition TV.
Wow. So that
now I was once in a room with a 103-inch 1080p TV, and it was a very intense immersive experience. 110 inches, I can hardly even imagine. You need dual 240-volt industrial wall outlets to run it.
So this needs the same outlets that your appliances need, like an oven and
right.
The dryer and really high-power stuff like that. And it needs two of them?
Right. Now, for a great ultra-high-definition TV without the power footprint, you could check out Panasonic's prototype 4K OLED TV.
Yeah, but these TVs are not going to be in a price range where we can actually buy them, right? They're going to be super expensive.
They will. I mean, they're not even really on the market yet.
Yeah.
But Samsung has promised that their 85-inch 4K TV will be under $30,000. Sony already has their 84-inch 4K TV on the market for $24,000.
Sign me up.
And Panasonic is already making OLED TVs that are under $3,000.
Oh, by the way, Rennie in the chat there mentions that everything is 240 volts where he's located. So, yeah, everything in the U.S., that's not true. But outside of the U.S., that is largely true.
Well, it's true in some countries, but not all.
Yeah, not all.
And I will remind you that you would still need two outlets on two separate circuits to power the 110-inch television.
Yeah, pretty intense.
All right, and that's all I have for our top stories. Those two TVs.
Really, so with that, let's turn on the afterburners, Mr. Marr. Get us going.
Lovely. I'm ready to go. Now, we've been talking about T-Mobile getting the iPhone. They kept saying that it's going to come in 2013. Now they're starting to release a few more details. They are launching the iPhone with their new plan to eliminate all carrier subsidies for the phones, which they say will save you money in the long run. And they're not wrong, but it's going to happen in 3 to 4 months. 3 to 4 months, their plans will change. They'll get the iPhone officially. In the meantime, you can buy an iPhone from someone else and run it on whatever plan you want.
So Steam has revealed some details about a Project Piston. That's the code name for the Steam Box that we've seen rumors flying around recently. We've seen this in the news recently, and it's real. It's still, I guess, in beta, but it exists, and it looks pretty cool. It's very small. I'm very kind of impressed by the form factor. So we've got a link in the show notes if you want to know a little bit more, and if you want to get Steam on your TV with the Steam Box.
And speaking of beta testing, Netflix has finally released a few details on their initial beta tests of separate personalized profiles for individual accounts. Now, this is something they used to have before they were a mainly streaming company, but got rid of, and it's been gone for a few years. I think we complained about it when they got rid of it, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm sure.
And so finally they're getting ready to start bringing it back. And at this point, I'm very excited too, because I now have Netflix.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool. So,
well, I share Netflix with a few people, so that's why it's especially important to me.
So Dell is releasing details on its new Latitude 10 tablets. They're $499, and they have a actual Intel chip in there, although a 720p screen as opposed to the Microsoft Surface Pro, which has a 1080p screen. So they've got a cheap Windows 8 and not Windows RT offering. So that seems kind of interesting.
Right. And finally, Amazon has just announced their free digital copy service. What that means is any CD that you have purchased through Amazon under your same account since 1998 will be automatically eligible for a free MP3 download.
That is just awesome.
Yeah, and it took them long enough.
Yeah,
I mean, this technology was available in 1998, but then the record companies sued it out of existence for 15 years.
They had to wait for the licensing to catch up.
That is just really sad.
Yeah, I mean,
Let's turn off the afterburner so I can talk for a second about how sad that is.
Okay, let's turn them off. You can undo your seatbelt.
But yeah, I mean, the technology was there. We had it. The product was existed, and people were trying to capitalize on it in 1998.
Yeah, but you know, at some point, licensing is licensing. I mean, you have to deal with these people.
Licensing shouldn't take 15 years.
Yeah, nothing 15 years. That's 15 a that's years. A really long
Space
time.
Space stations should take 15 years. Licensing does not take 15 years. It takes one meeting over lunch with cocktails.
Well, I think you should go work for the movie industries then and get it done.
They would probably hate me.
They would hate you. In fact, they wouldn't hire you.
Because apparently they like to do things the slow way.
Yeah, how long do you think it's going to take the movie industry to achieve something like this?
Well, they're at least supposedly trying, right, with ultraviolet?
Yeah, the ultraviolet exists, but even now, it's better than it used to be. I always look toward Richard. He tries all of the ultraviolet implementations so that we don't have to.
Well, so I figured it out. Here is where, here is when the movie industry will solve it. When all of it becomes obsolete and irrelevant, because that is exactly when Amazon and the record companies figured out how to get free MP3 downloads to people who buy CDs. No one buys CDs anymore. So sure, why not? Free download.
Why not?
No one buys movies anymore. So sure, why not? Free download. That's when it happens.
So when there's no longer, or when there is less of a business case to be made for doing this, then that's when it all happens.
No, Chris, you're missing the whole point. It's when there's no business case.
When
there is none whatsoever, that is when we will have unrestricted freedom.
Okay, I can agree with that, I think.
All right, so we've cooled down from the afterburners. I'm okay now. I'm done with my rant. We can move on to the end user stories.
Yeah, we had that was like some kind of middle section between the afterburners and our stories. We've only got a couple of the end user stories this week because we've been so top heavy with all of the CES news. But I thought I'd at least pass along that it's kind of interesting that Windows RT has finally, I guess it didn't take that long. I shouldn't say finally, but it's gotten a jailbreak of sort. So we're going to see some notion of a community app store come up around this ecosystem, I'd imagine. So that's kind of exciting for people who like to hack around and get into their devices. I don't think I'm going to be doing this, though.
No. I mean, what about once they start getting usable functionality differences between a stock tablet and a jailbroken tablet? I mean, what if they let you run Flash uninhibited?
Oh, that sounds wonderful. No, if I run up against a use case where something would get exposed that would otherwise not be usable, then okay, that's one thing. But I'm pretty sure all of the apps are just going to cover it, right?
I don't know. I think Flash could happen pretty quickly, and I'm making a technically unknowledgeable opinion guess here. I don't know the first thing about cracking a Windows RT Surface, but I think that it's possible.
Well, there is some notion now. I'm not terribly sure how the WinRT stuff works, but there is some notion that you would have to recompile your code to get it to run on ARM. So I'm not sure that the Intel apps are not going to work.
Life finds a way, Chris.
Yeah. Okay. I suppose. Well, I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to kind of wait and see. So, what always happens is, you open this thing up and people get into it and they figure out how to do some things that previously they couldn't do, and things happen after that. So we'll have to kind of wait and see what people actually do with this. Okay, and this will be the last of the end user stories, and after that we've got a app pick that you've arranged for us and a tip of the week that you've also arranged for us, and as always, the kicker. So one of the things that I was excited to see what happened at CES was home automation. I think that home automation is going to come into its own this year in a way that we really haven't seen before. And we're going to start to see a lot of devices that we can connect to the internet or just locally that we can control remotely and kind of write scripts for and stuff like that, so that we can automate a lot of the appliances in our house, the coffee makers and lights and stuff like that, and all kinds of fun stuff. And, we've seen the Nest thermostat in the past make a pretty big splash, and I think we're going to see a lot of that in the coming year. So the most...
Well, the amazing thing that we've seen is now that the Nest is making such waves in the home automation community, we're seeing other standalone devices that are able to communicate with Nest.
Yeah, it's like a platform of sorts.
Yeah. So things are starting to come together where people can pick and choose reasonably priced individual gadgets that help them focus on whatever home automation priorities they have without spending $10,000 for the full install.
Right. Yeah, the self-install, I feel like, is a very important thing. And the experience of the self-install has to be an easy one. And I guess, at least for the geekier stock out there, the installing the Nest has been pretty easy. So I wanted to share with everyone the one that looked the best to me, and this is from a company called GreenWave. Now, they don't actually have a product per se yet, But they've got a bunch of modules, and they're all wireless, and they all kind of align with how I think a home automation system should work. You know, being somebody who's never had one, so I'm not sure how valid that is. But these guys are a startup that raised a bunch of money, and they look very, very interesting to me. So these are some devices to keep your eye on.
Yeah, I think they look great. And the really interesting thing to me, especially as the Green Tech reporter, is that they are not targeting home automation per se. What they're trying to be is a home energy management system.
Right, so, it's both.
Yeah, all of their devices are focused on getting your energy usage down and your bill consequently.
Yeah, so they all monitor the amount of power that you're using with the device that they're controlling. And then as kind of a side effect, they also allow you to control that device depending on what it is. So they have these plug-in modules, which look pretty competent. And they're using the wireless Zigbee standard. So that's good, too. And
Zigbee allows them to actually communicate with the smart meter put in your house by the utility.
Right. So I think they're doing it right, and I'll be interested to see if they actually get off the ground and actually put some of this out there and get past the prototyping phase.
Yeah, me too. I think this looks really exciting.
Yeah, so that's my favorite of the lot. You know, there were a bunch of products out there, and I think this was the most interesting.
Maybe we'll see them at CES 2014.
Again?
Again?
Again? All right, well, let's get into the tip of the week. You've got a good one following up the home automation. We've got some phone automation. What do you think?
Yes, so the tip of the week this week is If This Then That. It's ifttt.com. And we are bringing them up this week because they have, well, I should start with what they do, shouldn't I? It's a web service that can combine your other web services in ways that you may not have thought were possible. You can set a trigger on Facebook or Flickr or Instagram or Gmail and have it do something somewhere else. So, I don't know, let's say you put a photo into Flickr, and you could have If This Then That automatically tweet it or post it to Instagram or Facebook if that was something you want to do. And you could set up tags. It's very customizable. There are a lot of options. They've just added two new triggers to Gmail that you can select any new email or any new starred email and have it do whatever you want. It's a very useful web service that we haven't really covered in great detail on the end user before. So there you are.
This looks
Check
really
it out. They have a great tutorial on their website, and they're very easy to set up.
They have added a ton of stuff since I've last
So much stuff.
Yeah, they've even got the new Belkin Wemo stuff in there. That seems really cool. That's another home automation product that you can plug into the wall and control things. So that's really neat. I didn't realize they had expanded so much.
Yeah, it's great. All so right. That's our tip of the week. You just have to go there, try it out, see what it can do, and then just let it percolate for a while, and then you'll come up with the actions that it is useful for. It's different for everybody, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to have to take another look at this because it always seemed to me like I could achieve the same result with it, with other ways of doing things, and I think this looks... This looks really, really hassle-free. So I'm going to have to take another look at this thing.
You should, as should our listeners. Now, our app of the week this week, I want to talk about Plex. Plex had a lot of updates over our holiday break. First, they updated their Windows and Mac desktop apps, and they've rebranded themselves into Plex Home Theater. So Plex came out of Xbox Media Center and turned it into more of a desktop-centric app, but it was still, it focused a lot on just TV and movies. Now they're really trying to be a full-featured home theater hub. They have HD audio support now, AirPlay and DLNA streaming, and a lot more. Finally, in the last week or so, they added a Windows 8 Modern UI app, as well as a web client and a media server.
Yeah, that's really cool that they got into the Windows 8 app game. And I haven't gone to use it yet because this is the first I was hearing about it since it's your app pick. So I'm definitely going to go install this and see what's going on. I wonder if they're going to talk about it on Entertainment 2.0 or something.
Well, I'd be surprised if nobody talks about it, because it seems obvious to me that Plex has been doing a lot of work with these new updates. And I haven't actually had a chance to check it out yet, but I'm very excited to try it.
Yeah, it looks pretty slick, too.
So that's all I have for our app of the week. I mean, it's an app for practically any platform you have.
Yeah, pretty much. They've got a pretty good Android client out, too. So with that, Let's get into our last story of the podcast, Mr. Marr. You have a kicker for us.
Okay, well, when the internet launched a petition for the U.S. government to build a Death Star to stimulate the U.S. economy, we blew it off because it seemed pretty infeasible and was unlikely to garner a serious response from the White House. But it did garner a serious response from the White House, albeit one that is also hilarious. Now, I'm not going to read the entire text of the response from the Obama administration about building a Death Star, but I will explain that they start off with realistic construction estimates that we've covered on the show before, that the estimated cost of a Death Star in today's dollars would be about $850 quadrillion.
Yeah, so that doesn't sound like a good use of taxpayers' money, does it?
Right. Not a great investment in a struggling economy.
So we're not going to see one.
But then they go on to talk about the International Space Station that we already do have, what's coming up for it, and other investments in science and technology. So it's a great, hilarious, and on-point, serious response to the joking internet petition about the U.S. government building a Death Star.
Yeah,
that's kicker worthy, or nothing is.
Definitely so. How would somebody get in contact with
you? Why? What do they need me for?
Well, presumably they're listening to this podcast, so they'd like to tweet something at you.
Oh, well, in that case, please tweet me at TaylorPhone.
And I'm at Chris Hale Barnes, so please give us some feedback. If we missed anything from CES, do let us know, and we'll talk about it on the next show, because it's pretty hard to dig through all of this information. But I think we had a pretty good list, and again, just let us know if we missed anything.
Well, Chris, I'm sure we missed lots of things.
If we missed anything important, I suppose.
Let's just pretend that was all on purpose, okay?
All right, sounds good. So let's get out of here. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, at thedigitalmediazone.com under The End User. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a handful of other podcasts. You can listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and the Movie Podcast. You can also send us some feedback. We are TheEndUser@thedigitalmediazone.com. Or you can ping us at The End User, so tell us if we missed anything. You can always join us live as we record the show every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.
When do you think we'll see tractor beams at CES?